Hey there, everybody. It's day one of Mobile World Congress. Finally. Things are looking pretty grim, actually. We're already out of food.
We're almost dead.
We're already out of booze in the apartment here in Barcelona.
Call for help.
It's only day one.
And I'm paying blood.
Hi, I'm Phil from Android Central. You know me. So we're doing Mobile World Congress here in Barcelona. And yeah, we're done with day one. And it feels like day three because it's actually day four, I think. I forget how long we've been here. It's been a while now.
Time ceases to exist in Barcelona. Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. You can check your phone to see which day it is. I had to do that a few times today.
I saw the sun once.
Yeah. So
that was kind of cool. So we got Simon Sage, Dan Rubino, Alex Dobie here.
Hey.
They're busting their butts bringing all this coverage to you. I'm just kind of hanging out. We have empty Pringles cans here on the table. That's all I've been doing. So let's talk about what we've done today, day one. What did we do? Dan actually had news.
Yes. I'm actually joining the podcast for once because we have something important to report.
If you don't know, Dan runs WP Central, our Windows phone site. That's where I got started. It was me and Dan.
It's true. Back in the day. So today we had a big day. Nokia had their morning press release, and well, it wasn't a release, but the press conference, and it was actually a pretty big event. It was an hour long, and they had numerous announcements, including their Asha line, which is Symbian, and although we don't cover that on any of our sites, Symbian is still a pretty important product for them. But the bigger news was they announced two new phones, technically one, but one, well, actually it was three phones, now I'm thinking about it. The 610 is a Nokia Lumia device, meaning it's a Windows phone. That's going to be for the low-end emerging markets. And it's actually a really nice phone. I was totally blown away by the design of it and the quality of it. And by quality, I'm meaning here how it feels in the hand, the smoothness, the balance of the weight, how well it's distributed, the screen quality, all of that. It's, if that's Nokia's low-end, then we should be really happy about that because it's really just quality stuff. Of course, they also have the 900. It's going international. That'll be going in April to Canada and then elsewhere, probably Europe and, out east. So you guys can look forward to that in the next 2 months. And the 900 won't have LTE in those markets, but it will have, if I can get this right now, it's pretty late, dual HSPA Plus, which I'm not aware of, but it's a dual channel HSPA.
Okay.
Some networks apparently support this, and if you don't have LTE, this is the next best thing that you can have, basically. It's going to give you basically 42 megabit upload and download speeds. Actually, I got to verify if it's the upload, but definitely the download speeds. So it's that's an interesting thing.
For the Canadian launch, is that going to be on Rogers or Telus?
That's Rogers.
Okay, see, I know that Telus launched a dual cell HSPA in a couple of markets.
Okay,
and so like they're on top of that, but I don't think Rogers ever made any announcements to that effect. So,
well, actually, the Rogers one, you guys luck out. You're getting the LTE version.
Oh, cool, good.
So you guys get the big one. Everybody else is going to get this dual channel version. So it goes to show you that once again, Nokia can still sort of innovate and make up for that difference. And then the other big thing was the PureView, the Symbian 808 device. Now, this was another Symbian phone, of course. But
it's got some spec that's just friggin' ridiculous.
So they announced that we knew that they were doing something with cameras, and they're focusing big on that.
Well, I mean, so is HTC, and HTC came nowhere near the shock value of what you're about to tell us, Dan.
Well, they were teasing with a 1080p video a couple of days ago, and we're like, okay, 1080p, big deal. But it was a 41 megapixel sensor that was announced today with Carl Zeiss, and 41 megapixel. I mean, it was only about a month ago that HTC announced they're doing the Titan 2 with a 16 megapixel sensor, and that was kind of crazy. They totally leapfrogged the Titan 1, which was only 8, and now we're going to 41 megapixels. It's just blows our mind. But let's clarify something first of all here. This is not just them sticking pixels into a little sensor and calling it, the most amazing camera ever. They did something really unique here where the 41 megapixels aren't all active at the same time, and it uses a varying technology that's found in satellites where you can take a 5, 8, or 38 megapixel photo And if you take only like 5 megapixels, it doubles those other pixels that are being used to augment the scene itself. So you get a really clean, crisp image. And then, of course, you can use all 38 megapixels and you get incredible crop factors and you can like really keep zooming in to really see the whole scene. And what's neat is it saves each image as a in special formats. You can pick different formats that are more economical for sending these photos or sharing them on Facebook, because who wants to upload a 10 megabyte file to Facebook, right?
Well, and you don't need to.
Right, right. But still, the quality of these photos, they're really, really impressive. And like I said, it's not, you're not sacrificing the high ISO in, low light functionality that you typically get with like DSLR cameras where they will do this, where they have the megapixel race. But it's an impressive feat of technology. It also has Dolby 5.1 plus technology in there for output. And, yeah, it's kind of gimmicky, but I mean, it basically all you need to know, it has really good sound.
We might have to buy one just to put it up camera wise against the other, especially after what HTC, everything they said and did last night. For as awesome as the HTC phones were, it's still just hardware at that point. I still really want to see what, real life photos look like.
Yeah. And so like the thing with the Nokia, right, this is a Symbian phone, but obviously it's a look into the future for Windows Phone. And they basically said this technology will work into Windows Phone. People have been asking why it's not there now. That's because the OS simply does not support all these innovations that Nokia has done. And so they're working with Microsoft, and I guarantee this will come out in the fall. And with the Apollo, the Windows Phone 8 devices, we'll see this same technology being used. And I'm okay with that because no one's going to leapfrog this or even pass it. I guarantee Apple, HTC, Samsung will not come close to what this camera phone can do within the next 6 to 9 months. It's just not going to happen. So Nokia has a little breathing room here. So
I wish it shot raw because I would really like to do some photoshopping on a phone, especially if you could just beam it off to a tablet or something. That'd be huge.
Hey, you know where you can?
Where?
On the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1.
Oh yeah, how is that?
It's actually not bad. Sorry, we're going to segue off.
Okay, I just want to say, the thing about RAW, though, is that the file sizes are so huge that I think that's probably the downside to doing it for even transferring files.
Hey, you know what other device does photos in RAW on device?
What?
The HTC One series.
Oh, that's the new stuff that was announced.
Yeah, yeah. You created two segues.
We missed this last night. I know.
Right.
I just segued out of one segue into
another. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, so the Galaxy Note 10.1 was officially announced this morning. We saw it yesterday in the billboards, and I gave Samsung a hard time about that. But it has Photoshop Touch on it. We've seen Photoshop Touch before a long time ago, and then they've also got the SDK so that other apps can loop into it. But it works pretty well, especially with that pen. Now,
Actually, the whole tablet UI works really well with that pen.
It really, really does.
Something that's that big, you get a lot of friction when you're sort of dragging around, and there's nothing
it's,
like that.
It's so tempting fast to call it like a Galaxy Tab with a stylus, but it's really not. They've really done a lot to the software that makes it a lot better. And the Photoshop itself, I mean, you have anchor points and you drag things and they turn me into a pirate. I'm sitting back there with the women of Samsung PR, and we're all good friends, and they're like, look, we're going to turn you into a pirate. And they take my picture, and I'm going, arr, and they put a patch on my eye.
Cool.
Had a little too much fun with it. How much, do you really need to do that in real life?
I think I could start doing that. I would learn to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah,
it's going to be great for artists, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is something that the iPad, the iPad, just because it's so universal, a lot of artists are playing around with that. But you still got the limitation of it's all capacitive.
Yeah.
Whereas if you got this S Pen, which is, no friction on the surface, it's much more accurate. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what people do with it.
Yeah. So we got that. They announced some Galaxy S2 Galaxy S Wi-Fi 4.2. Well, whatever. What else? You went to Asus this morning.
I went to Asus this morning. Yeah, we had the Asus press conference this morning. We had Johnny Shi, the chairman of Asus, giving us a presentation. So the big first thing to come out of that was that the Transformer line has actually been renamed. So it's no longer the ePad Transformer line. It's now the Asus Transformer Pad line. And all the older devices have actually it kind of makes sense, sort of, if you think about it. All the older ones have been renamed, so, kind of retroactively. So the first one was the Transformer Pad 101, the 201, the Prime and 300 series, which is going to be the upcoming, I hate to say budget-based, but it's going to be cheaper than the Infinity, which is the high-end.
Right.
It's still Tegra 3. It's still
that Infinity, well, it's the Infinity 700, right?
The 700, yes.
That thing looks badass.
Yeah, and actually it wasn't there today. I'll have to track it down on the show floor. But the really crazy thing they showed off was the pad foam. And we've known about the pad foam for almost a year now, but it finally emerged today running Ice Cream Sandwich. And it seemed like every minute or so, a new crazy hardware component was pulled out. So first, it was just the phone and the tablet, and we all know about that. But then things start to get a little more interesting. So, of course, you've got a phone running Ice Cream Sandwich, you plug it into a tablet, it becomes an Ice Cream Sandwich tablet. You get extra battery life, you know.
I think it's probably 5 hours.
So, you know, all well and good. You've got a tablet and a phone. It's kind of a little bit bulky. Still pretty easy to use with one hand, or you know, hold with one hand and operate with the other. And then you start bringing a keyboard dock into the equation. So you put your phone in a tablet, and then the tablet goes in the keyboard dock.
It's like a friggin'
Perestroika
doll. Or
yeah. And of course, I think you get an extra 9 hours.
I know it's not called a Perestroika doll, by the way.
And you get an extra 9 hours out of that, battery-wise. So you're looking at crazy battery life, because it's powered by a Snapdragon S4 dual core.
That's the one, the crate, the KRA.
That's the crate, yeah, the same one that's in the 1S.
That's pretty awesome.
And then, as if that wasn't enough, what happens if you get a phone call while you're in tablet mode or in laptop mode?
It automatically undocks and transforms into a phone.
I actually missed a step here. You have pen input as well. Capacitive pen input. And what happens when you get a call is you use the pen as a handset.
You put it in your ear?
Yes. You put it up to your face and got a mic here and a speaker here, and you can use it as a handset.
Tell me you have pictures of you doing this.
We don't. We will. I mean, at some point, there was a crazy crowd at the press conference today. We have pictures. We don't have pictures of people using it. But we definitely want to get a video of that at some point.
Yes.
It's absolutely crazy, and I still don't know whether it's the stupidest thing I've ever seen or the most awesome thing I've ever seen.
I think it's awesome. It's they're doing a lot of new things here. I'm sure that artists that write a lot, that get a lot of phone calls, are going to be thrilled about this.
So, and same with people who like to put things in their ears.
Sure.
I swear to you, when I was doing my Galaxy Note review the other day and wrapping it up and finally doing the video, I was thinking of like some funny thing to do with the stylus and like everything you can do with, oh, you can pick your nose, you can stick it in your ear. But now you can.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so that's the pad phone. And it's crazier than we ever thought it would be. I mean, a year ago, it was mad enough just to think of a phone that you plug into a tablet. Now it plugs into a keyboard dock, and you've got a pen, and you can use it to answer phone calls. So
I love this because they're doing something that we haven't seen yet, and like,
which is what Asus has done from the start with this device. Actually.
Yeah,
it's the future.
Yeah, and you would almost say that the original Transformer sounded as crazy as that. You know,
it was
a laptop that's also a tablet,
and it works,
caught on in a kind of a big way.
Yeah, I sat down with the company everybody loves to hate over the past year. I sat down with Carrier IQ this morning. They were big and scary and neat. No, Andrew was awesome. He was great. So what they did, in fact, I didn't know that they were announcing news this morning. I thought we were just going to sit down and have a pleasant chat, and they would try to spin the events of the last 6 months. If you don't know, there was once upon a time a video from an amateur security research guy who thought he saw this Carrier IQ app sending all your data places and stuff. And what it turned out to be is it's an analytics app. It's been around for a long time. People just finally started to realize what it is. And it lets the carriers understand not just how you use your phone, but specifically when something goes wrong, it lets them see what goes wrong and what was happening on your phone when something goes wrong so they can try to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And it does this in real time, and we've had dozens of posts on this, it feels like. I think Carrier IQ is probably still pretty misunderstood and gets a bad rap, if only I ask people to, you know, give me questions they want to answer, and it's pretty apparent that they still don't understand what's going on, and that Carrier IQ does not sell its services to you and me. It sells it to the carriers. It sells it to people who sell millions of phones, not people who buy one or two every couple of years. So the news today is that they are rolling out these, basically an API service, for the carriers that will let the carriers present to us, the consumers, kind of what's going on with our phone in relationship to the network at any given time. So if you're starting to drop calls, you would log in to, say, AT&T, and then AT&T would have a web page that says, okay, well, here's your phone, where you are in your network, and everything that's running, so maybe here's what did it. Was it a phone problem? Was it a network problem? This is all theoretical, right? I don't know that AT&T is going to do it. It would be totally up to them on how they do it. But it's now an option, or will be.
It serves in their best interest, though, then, because AT&T doesn't want to be spending all of this time with CSRs helping
customers. Exactly. And that's, you know, Carrier IQ says, well, it's all about care, and it's all about trying to put a little more responsibility on us to try to, you know, figure out what's going on and make it easy to do so, so that you're not having to call customer service. Because, you know, a couple of reasons for that. One, it, you know, it takes a lot of our time, right? And it takes a lot of, you know, the carrier's time. And time is money. Absolutely it is. So that's the idea. Now, it is going to cost the carriers extra to implement this, and for a number of reasons, and that makes sense. And the question is, will it? I don't know. Do we even care? That's it. I mean, you would still be forced, you know, you would need to use it. And if you don't use it, you don't get the complaints. I don't know.
There's still been a general movement away from Carrier IQ, so the carriers are really going to be keen to implement a more aggressive version of it.
Yeah, I mean,
regardless of whether it actually is, you know, useful to.
And you don't, I mean, look, the carriers are going to use something. They absolutely are going to use something. And if they don't, then I'm not sure I want to be on that carrier.
But I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's just folded into your end user license agreement that you just flip over when you sign your 2-year contract, right? Yeah. And, like, carriers are going to know where you are to some extent just by virtue of cell tower.
They should, right? Yeah. And they need to know, you know, what's going on my phone if something goes wrong so they can make it better. And
I don't know what you guys are talking about. There's no Windows phone that has any Carrier IQ on it.
It's got something.
No, it doesn't.
I guarantee you there's some sort of analytics on there so that the carrier knows what's going on.
No, the only analytics programs are for Microsoft themselves, which they tell you before you use the app for the first time. You can agree or opt out. There's like a typing one, which
at the app level and not at the OS level. There's got to be
on the OS level, but it's only in Microsoft. There's nothing for carriers.
I guarantee you, data is flowing back to the carriers somehow. Absolutely, 100% guarantee it.
I'm sure there's something as far as like pinging for data and everything like that. But as far as we know, there's nothing running in the background that's sending like any sort of data back to the carrier.
I guarantee it. I will bet you.
You can guarantee it, but the burden of proof is on you. You got to show me what it's doing. We've had people look at this. There's nothing that's going on here. There's nothing at the OS level. Microsoft has said as much, and besides taking their word for it, we've had our own Rafael Rivera's looked into it, and he hasn't found anything in the operating system. He went through the ROM, and there's nothing.
Or maybe you're right, and this is why we still don't see anything on Verizon.
And does T-Mobile have this too?
I don't know. I think the Verizon thing's
everybody has something. Surely.
Yeah.
Everybody has something. But, I guarantee it.
Yeah. I thought there were some carriers that don't use this. And it's kind of weird because AT&T, like, I think we can all universally agree upon, has like a pretty crappy network. And yet, like, they're supposedly have Carrier IQ and.
Not to dive back into it too deep, but AT&T voluntarily did it. Yeah. AT&T, and I forget the name, you know, I've got it in the post, but AT&T had an app that you could install on your iPhone and BlackBerry and Android. And maybe Windows Mobile too, actually. I forget. Yeah. I have to go back and look.
I think it did.
That if you drop a call, you fire up this app, and then it collects that data and shoots it off to them real quick.
And that's fine. Like, I have absolutely no problem with that, and that's, like, totally a great idea. And I like this idea of opt-in.
Sure.
Kind of helped out the network. The problem with that Carrier IQ, of course, was the big question mark of what it was actually recording and sending back.
Well,
you know, one thing about, like, sending, like, obviously the cellular triangulation, or AFLT, what's technically it's called, you know, is one thing. And knowing that, but when it comes down to personal information, like there was this weird gray area with Carrier IQ that I didn't know if it was like, is it recording keystrokes? Can it record keystrokes?
It wasn't recording keystrokes.
Right. I know, but
interacting with Android in a way that made it look like it could be.
Right. And there were problems with the way it was coded, and it was doing things that it shouldn't have done in a certain manner.
Yeah.
It's not inherently evil. I really don't want to get back into that argument. But the point is today they're rolling out something that can help the carriers present it back to us better. On one hand, it's a level of transparency, and that's good.
Yeah.
And on the other, it puts the onus back on us a little bit, and I think that's important too. You know, a lot like having a specific app where if you drop a call, you say, hey, I just dropped a call.
And I think that's ultimately the best route for this, because...
Maybe. I don't want an app where I have to say I dropped a call. I don't want an app where I have to say, well, my data just disconnected. I want them to know it. I want them to see it.
Yeah, but I mean, with the current stuff, it was also about like apps crashing and stuff like that, and like what apps you use, and it was like kind of curious about what was actually being recorded.
So if that's a network thing, I think the carrier needs to know.
If it was
the argument is if it's a network level thing, shouldn't the network detect it without any intervention, any kind of intervention from the handset?
Can't do it if there's not something there to do it.
I
mean, they have to talk to each other. It's not a one-way street. And it still ignores the fact that it's the carriers who are the ones who use, you know, carrier IQ to not magically appear on the phone. The carriers paid for it. They bought it.
Right.
So so you can't just pretend that carrier IQ is inherently evil.
No, guns but we can ask if it's useful. Because sure. I'm not convinced that the carriers that were using and embracing carrier IQ actually had any better performance or... than a carrier that didn't have it. I mean, it's fun. As I'm saying, going back to AT&T, one of the biggest networks around, and all that. And I know AT&T is that it's a complicated matter, but like, did carrier IQ actually improve their network usage? Has anyone used AT&T recently and said, well, like, wow, this is an amazing network?
Asking that question blankly like that, I think, is almost as irresponsible as trying to answer it. I mean, none of us knows.
You can have a compare the way the network is now to the way it would have been without carrier IQ.
Right. But I'm just saying it doesn't seem to be helping. I'm saying that the carriers that don't use it don't seem to be suffering.
You haven't used Sprint lately, have you?
It's so difficult to say. We've only got 4 or 5 in a country. It's so difficult to
intimate. Let's get off that, because I really didn't mean us to go down that road. Sorry. I'm just going through the list of any other non-Android news you guys want to talk about before I flip through the rest of it.
There's a ZTE Windows phone.
Yeah, that was kind of the only other Windows phone that's going to be
ZTE
announced.
ZTE is primarily a Chinese...
Yeah, they're Chinese, and they're an interesting company. Their hardware is actually not... I don't want to say it's not bad. It's actually really good hardware. It's something you wouldn't expect for this low-end, mid-range sort of device, but it kind of reminds me of the Samsung Focus, the original one that came out. It's this... They use Chrome. Nice little device. Now, it's still only 4 gigs of storage that's available to the end user. This is nothing that's going to be used for... United States. However, ZTE is a company to watch. They've announced also a lot of Android phones today. And they're a company that has huge ambitions to really break into the U.S. market and Europe and go worldwide. They're actually seem to be modeling themselves off of the HTC method of getting into the, you know...
We've seen Huawei do that as another Chinese one.
And
very much the same direction.
Yep. And so these companies are really trying to break out of that mold of just being behind the scenes. And ZTE, I have to admit, their stuff is actually interesting, and I think they have a place. So their Windows phone today was called the Orbit. You can check it out at WP Central. It's a decent-looking device.
It's their second one. They were following up on the other one.
The Tanya.
Yeah, Tanya.
I went and saw Ubuntu for Android. We've been talking about this for a week now. The nerds are very excited about it. And actually, I am too, and I'm not even a Linux user, and I think it's very, very cool. I've actually seen a preview video before today. I know it leaked out. We didn't post it because I agreed not to. But seeing it, you know, first person today, it's magical. It's magical. It really is cool. It runs in parallel with Android, so it's not running on top of Android like, you know, you've seen. It's not being emulated or anything. It's using the same kernel. And I tell you, what's really cool is because it has complete access to your phone, your contacts, apps. Apps will run in a window on the screen, and they're going to clean that up before release. It'll have a different UI to it. But you can make phone calls right there from the desktop. Just right-click call, and if you have a microphone, it calls. And that's something I do at home, actually, through Google Voice, because we have our podcast.
So this is geared for Ubuntu users?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... It's nerdy no matter what.
Yeah. Now I'm just, like, wondering, like...
I'm not quite sure if there's going to be
like
a real consumer
demographic
use case.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird. Like, that's, like, interesting news, but then it's, like, with Nokia and what Microsoft are doing today, we're going after that 60 million users, people that don't have smartphones. It's, like, weird. Like, it's one's going after niche, one's going after this untapped mass.
Yeah. Well, there's still people with dollars, right?
Yeah.
I think that it's plotting the course between collision with desktop computers and mobile.
The same kind of thing we've seen with Moto's laptop dock and all the devices, that kind of thing. I definitely see it in that kind of product in the future.
Yeah. Speaking of niche, I got to play with the Samsung Galaxy Beam, which has a projector, a Pico projector, I guess they're called. These are not new. We've seen these in phones, God, since I've been doing this for at least 2 years now.
LG X phone. Mm-hmm. That's the first one.
Yeah, that's right.
Still have them.
And I'm not sure they're any more useful now than they were then. They're fun to play with, and it's cool to... I'm sitting there doing my little demo, shining the projector on the back of a friend of ours.
But this is like the first consumer device where it's actually built into the phone and it actually looks borderline.
It's not a horrible phone to hold in your hand. And actually, it's not thin, but even if it didn't have a projector, I don't think I'd throw it against the wall. It's not the worst thing in the world. Now, the projector works well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I mean, this is a big question. Mm-hmm. When the Pico projector 2 years ago came out with the LG Expo, it was kind of cool, but it was pretty novelty, but it worked pretty well. Everybody I showed it to was impressed, but honestly, the image on your wall was not the most high definition, right? So how has that improved, if at all?
It's tough to tell. It's 15 lumens. I don't know however bright that is. I don't really have anything compared to, except for, we were in a normal room, I guess, and I shined it up on the ceiling, and you could still see it even with the light. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be like watching TV, right?
Yeah.
It's for showing something. It's primarily business.
Right.
Hey, I've got this on my phone. Let me show it to you real quick. I would totally use it to screw with my dog. I would have videos of cats running around on the floor and be like, go get it, instead of a laser pointer with the Pico projector.
I was going to say, until this can do like laser holographs, which I don't know if that's a real thing. I don't know. I mean, this is like, it's stuff that we can't imagine using every day right now, but stuff we can all imagine using 5-10 years from now.
When it can project Princess Leia onto a tape.
Exactly. When that happens, and that's what this will turn into. That's what's crazy. We're all watching the birth of that technology. So it may not be useful right now, but you're going to see it keep evolving over the next couple of years. So it's important to keep an eye on that.
So not until it has holograms as outlined on that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Alex and I went down to the Google booth. I hung out there for a little while. Much like last year, Hugo Barra from Google teased a picture of a big bowl of jelly beans there, by the way. Look, if the next version of Android isn't Jelly Bean, I think everybody will be surprised. I'm not sure how many leaks we need. How many decent... sweet dessert names, whatever, start with J. It's pretty obvious.
And then here's the thing, if it's not called Jelly Bean, that is probably not, it's just not going to be called Jelly Bean. It's not going to be any different.
It'll be Jello.
That's true. The OS
Jello.
Is going to be with the OS.
Officially sponsored.
Android brought to you by Jello. We get Bill Cosby to be the. So, a lot like last year, the big slide is back, the smoothie bar is back. Whole bunch of developers are back, which is great to see. A big section for Google Music. Mm-hmm. I think where the Androidified thing was last year. We got to play a little more of the HTC One series, and Alex didn't get to see it yesterday, so he played it for the first time.
Yeah, and all three look really nice, I've got to say. I think in a lot of ways the S is probably the nicest looking. It's really thin. It's got there are a couple of different versions of it, and I guess you probably heard more about this than I have, Phil, but they use a different manufacturing process with each one, don't they?
So that's not... let me back up. So the One X is polycarbonate, right? It's fancy plastic. The One S... And the One S actually got a little more news out of it today. So there are actually two versions of it, and I didn't realize that at first. Now, they look just like different paint colors, but they're actually two different manufacturing processes. One fries the aluminum with plasma that basically turns it into a ceramic. And it feels pretty cool. It almost feels like a powder coat that's about to come off. And if you rub your fingernail on it, it leaves a little white mark. It doesn't scratch it, but it leaves a weird little white mark.
Yeah, and the guy actually worry about that a little bit. Filing his nails on the back of the phone.
Yeah.
A bit weird.
The other one, the silver version, is more just kind of a normal painted metal sort of thing. And he was talking about how it has some sort of washed in acid thing, but I'm not sure what that means. And when I asked HTC about it, they told me, it's more traditional painting, basically. So there are two colors out there. I have no idea where you can get one or the other. How that's going
to
play out.
I can see maybe one being exclusive to a certain carrier. They did that kind of thing before.
Exactly. I tell you, I like the kind of matte, non-fried one a little bit more, I think.
Yeah. The polycarbonate's interesting. That's what Nokia uses. That's the Lumia series.
We
got two of them right here.
It's plastic. It very much feels like this.
It's plastic, but it has like a weird metal touch to it. And what really makes polycarbonate interesting is it's dyed, at least how Nokia does it. I'm curious if HTC does this too. It's dyed straight through.
Right.
Meaning if you scratch
the
surface.
It's not like paint on plastic.
Yeah, it's going to be that scratch will kind of blend right back in. And it's a real, it's a technological feat. It's not something that's just done easily. And to be able to mold devices into this is actually kind of a challenge. So to see HTC doing that one, it's kind of funny because obviously they're trying to do the Nokia thing, which is a good model anyways. But have they pulled it off? I mean, that's pretty impressive too. Mm-hmm. It shows that continued increase of value that we see with HTC. They keep getting a little bit better and better and bringing more value to each phone.
I was amazed with the 1X how light it actually is.
Yeah.
Because of the polycarbonate.
For as big as it is, it's 4.7.
I haven't weighed it, but I think it's probably, it's a good deal lighter than the GeneX.
Yeah. Yeah. And the HTC One V you got to play with. I got to touch it. I didn't actually get to touch it last night. They wouldn't let us do it.
Yeah, well, they've got a demo unit there, which isn't actually turned on, so we didn't see the software, which isn't ready.
That's not unusual for HTC devices. I mean, at least one a year, I get like
that. You know, that makes sense. We've heard the least about it. It's probably early on in development. But it looks good. It is very much the...
it's the Legend. The Legend, basically, yeah. The chin is back. It feels great. It's a great size. I still love that size.
Yeah, and it looks good. It's got very angular look to it, kind of a contrast to the other two. It's going to be very interesting to see what price point it comes in at, because again, it's that premium build quality we've seen from HTC, and give it, you know, to the market at a good price.
Yeah, except for it's very much supposed to be just kind of the little brother of. I'm looking at specs here.
I'm kind of looking at it as a replacement for the Wildfire series.
All right, so 3.7 inch WVGA Super LCD.
Yeah,
so that's, you know, 480 by 800, right? So that's actually a really good resolution for that screen size.
Yeah, and I think the specs, I haven't seen the final specs.
Qualcomm 1 gigahertz 8255, 512 megabytes of RAM, only 4 gigs of storage, but you get 25 extra with Dropbox.
And that matches the Desire S almost spec for spec.
Right.
4 gigs of storage?
Yeah.
Wow.
But you get 25 megs free with Dropbox.
Yeah.
And does it SD card?
No SD card in any of these, and this needs to be repeated.
Those are all the specs of pretty much of a Windows phone.
Well, I mean, they're smartphones, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. I just want to say, I mean, you know, it's the HTC continuing to, you know, double dip, sort of, right, in the same designs. I wouldn't be surprised if they just throw Windows Phone OS off the back. It's the same.
Maybe. Well, they did it the other way around with the Titan and the Sensation.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so no removable batteries in any of the HTC One series and no external storage.
See, that might be a deal breaker for a few people, especially with the
feet. I'm kind of worried about that, yeah.
I think the other two, fair enough, 16 or 32 is enough for most people. 4 is going to be pushing it, I think.
I might still burn an upgrade for the X.
4 is low.
Four is real low.
Yeah.
I actually had one of the moms at my kid's daycare made me take her phone home the other day, look at it. She couldn't install an app, and finally it's like, I think there's only so much I can do. There's no storage on this thing. You have like room for 3 apps.
It's a weird change. It's like this. It mirrors what carriers are doing with throttling and limiting data.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing the same thing on the smartphone end, where they're starting to cut back on memory. Where before it was sort of like 2 gigs, 4 gigs, 8 gigs, 16. Everybody, they kept every year going up, and then pretty soon they're like 32 gigs, 16 gig, 12 gig, 8. Now they're going back down again. So it's almost weird to see a phone come out at 4 gigs. But
I don't know. It's just the fact that it's a budget handset,
right?
They have to. Draw the line somewhere, sure. And decide storage was the place to do
that. Yeah, no, it's definitely an easy split. And that, combined with cloud and widespread data coverage, that's the argument for doing it. We've been trying to get 32 gig devices on Windows Phone for a long time.
Yeah, and the 32 gig GeneX is still up in the air.
We don't know if we're getting that. So that's day one.
Great. Okay.
We got more?
Skype.
Oh, that's right. You got Skype for Windows Phone.
You know, last I checked, Microsoft actually bought the company.
Yeah.
So it only made sense that they actually delivered an app for Windows Phone. Now, a lot of people have been asking why it's taking so long, and that's partly because it turned out Skype was probably a mess. The coding behind the app was a little bit more complicated than I think Microsoft anticipated. And so today we have the app, and it's actually... The backbone of the app, it's technically a beta, is it's solid. I told you, I called someone over at HSPA, and it was really good quality. I mean, really good quality. I was impressed with it.
Do you think that means we'll end up with better Skype apps on the other platforms?
I don't see why not. You know, it's weird. Microsoft doesn't do this sort of vindictive, like...
No, I mean, Microsoft is coming out with Office for iPad. It's been
really yeah, cool, I mean...
So they're not moving away from other platforms.
Microsoft's departments operate independently of each other, and they just see business. So the Skype department has to make profit, has to, you know, go on other platforms. So they benefit from being successful in this. So, sure, I think they're going to start changing the background stuff a little bit more, and I think things will improve. And I really hope and think the UI will change, because the UI is kind of crap on Skype. Yeah. So.
Any BlackBerry news today?
I wouldn't know. I've been just covering all of the Android
stuff.
Yes,
that means no.
There is some BlackBerry stuff going on today. There's some TAT concept stuff that's apparently super awesome that I've got to check out. They've also got a Porsche there.
I saw the port, so I walked by that today.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it the same one as at CES?
Looked like it, yeah.
Okay, probably. Yeah. But yeah, no, I've got a developer thing tomorrow morning, and I've been farming up a bunch of questions from the Crackberry crew, and I'm going to grill them on OS 2.0, and there are a few really stupid things in Playbook 2.0, like the standalone email app doesn't do portrait. It's only in landscape.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. WebOS.
Sorry,
iPhone,
Derek.
iPhone. Yeah, you know. I mean, it's everywhere. People use them all over the place here. But all right, so Tuesday, anything big? I got meetings during the day and stuff. We've got the Eric Schmidt keynote tomorrow night, so it'll be around noonish in the States, noon Eastern, a little earlier. We will all be there, I think, because that's always a good time. Anything else?
Bunch of ZTE Android devices.
Yep.
They've got two LTE phones, both of which are coming to the U.S. They've got some quad-core stuff, I think. They've got a quad-core phone. I think it was a total of like 8 or 15 devices total. A bunch of them aren't coming to the U.S., but some of them are. I'm still sorting through the whole mess of it. Like Dan said, they generally feel pretty good. I mean, they still feel fairly budget, but they've got ICS, they've got LTE, they've got quad core. There's a lot of good stuff going on with CT.
Cool. So that's it. We will be back probably Tuesday. Maybe not. We'll see. Probably Tuesday.
We'll be dead by then.
Nah, we'll be alright. As long as we find food and booze, we'll be okay. Because it's getting a little rough in here. Alright, everybody. Catch you later.
Later.
See ya.